हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदिवो भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So then the let's say, basically concluding the point on the nature, the conditioned nature, is that the saying that it's one's own duties, it's our duties, then basically it is still a temporary thing, even though it may last for the life of this body. But it's temporary because this body, when it's finished, then those duties also finish. They don't continue. Therefore, they're not eternal. That is the point. So one life, one may be in one form with one conditioned nature, another life with a different conditioned nature. So because of that, then there'll be a problem. Huh? No, it's better they just, he'll get his drink. So therefore, it's all temporary. That is the main thing. Swami, come.
Where's your board?
No, because we got this. The double. We got a wall.
Okay. Then this meant so on this side. And
yeah, that or
ladies can call on this side. Yeah. I guess the same thing happens.
Yeah, or sometimes men sit front row about each other. Each other is more whatever they're used to.
Okay.
What is
your
love with it?
This one is bigger.
Yeah. If you ever want to make it on
there,
feel free to butt right in and say, wait.
Yes, that's it. Ken, are you okay there?
Yeah, you can just move up a little bit.
He needs something for his back.
Some space here.
Yeah, someone needs to something for the back. Just lean against one of the.
Can your back is okay?
Yeah.
If not, you can use it. There's a chair over there for you.
Sorry.
It's okay. Interesting chair, but chair nonetheless. Okay, so we're reading from the third chapter of Jiva Dharma. So in here, then there's this one person. He was a sannyasi. He was a Shankarite. He was a big Brahmin, very educated. And then when he was in Varanasi one day, because that's the seat of all these big Maya bodies, then one day he saw a Vaishnava come by, and he was chanting the holy names, and he was crying in ecstasy, and in this way, he was completely oblivious to the external surroundings. And so hearing this, then it kind of awoke in his heart the desire to understand more about this and what is beyond, because he saw that here is somebody who was detached from the world, but he was getting a taste that he had never seen or experienced. The Mayavadis, they just don't get really a taste. Their taste or their happiness is that there's no material pain. That is basically that's the taste, the conditioned aspect of sannyas. Means grihastha is attachment. They're attached to having things, getting things, controlling things, enjoying things. So for them that gives pleasure. But along with that then comes all the difficulties. You know, so much difficulty is there. in comparison to the amount of happiness that you get out of something from this material world. So the grihastha doesn't mind the difficulty of all the trouble, because the happiness is there for that pain. And that's, I mean, happiness is their material endeavor. And that is their goal. It means their goal, or they perform an activity to get a goal, and that's the material happiness. So they'll tolerate whatever's a trouble. But sannyasi means it's just the opposite. Because the difficulties outweigh what you get out of it, the happiness. So their happiness is no material troubles. So therefore they'll forgo seeming material happiness just to avoid material distress. So that is why, even though it is a more, you know, socially more elevated, and even if you say in the path that Krishna gives, it's more elevated, because jnana will be higher than karma. But unfortunately, they're both within this material realm. So then the sannyasi saw that there was something beyond what he knew and experienced, a happiness he had never seen before. Because he could see it was not material happiness, because the person was chanting the holy name. At the same time, he could see that his happiness was something different, because he had experienced material happiness. He had given that up and experienced in a very serious way the happiness of the, you know, endeavor for Brahman, the path of jnana. So he saw there was something new. So then he tried to find this person, couldn't find. So then he inquired about this, what is this? And then he was directed to Mayapur, to Navadvip. This is where such madmen reside, like that, you know. They're dressed like sannyasis, but they're in white, and they don't seem to carry all the symbols. They're not carrying the danda and the kamandalu. And though they're very detached, they're always absorbed. So they said, you know, these sentimentalists you'll find down in Navadvip. Because Navadvip is also a very great center of knowledge and learning. And it's, at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it was actually more prominent than Varanasi. Like that. It was the main seat of knowledge in India at the time. So he came, then he met one Paramahamsa there, and that person was very kind to him and gave him shelter and explained to him, you know, overcoming the difficulties of the impersonal path. How actually there's no such thing as the impersonal path. You know, the soul is being eternal. Then and being Satchitananda, then this idea of that you're going to absorb yourself in Brahman, which is Sat, will only satisfy one third of the qualities of the soul. And the other two, Chit, which means not the activities, and Ananda, which means the positive happiness of relationship, will not be found. So with time, then this sannyasi, he then gave up his conceptions of this, and also his conceptions that the externals are what makes one advanced. Because sometimes that's thought, you know, if you take up an activity, let's say you get into something, let's say like skiing or something. So many times the first thing you do is go out, buy the best skis, the best, you know, ski outfit, the best, you know, all the gadgets and trappings that make one a skier. And then one feels very satisfied that, yes, now I'm a big skier, because you're wearing whatever other people in the ski magazines and on the programs are wearing. But it doesn't actually make the skier. So then, once he understood that, you know, that then by chanting the holy name and that, then he came to the understanding of who he was as the Krishna's eternal servant. And then he is then taken up now, he is also then given up all his impersonal leanings and that. He has taken up the dress of the Vaishnav Paramahamsa. And now at this point, what's here is then this one Brahmin came from Shantipur. Shantipur is also, it's Advaitacharya's place. And that was also very known for its for the Brahminical culture and knowledge. But everybody there in Shantipur basically are all Karmakandis. That's the seat of Karmakanda. It's like Varanasi is the seat of impersonal. That's the seat of Karmakandi. So they're very, very absorbed in the temporary duties of Varanashram and all these different aspects. and, you know, feeling that this was very important. So he was a big, big, from a very prestigious family, very fixed in the Karmakanda, you know, what we call smartas, that they're very attached to the ritual, and that the ritual itself will give you the result you want. And because they've performed the ritual, it's actually another form of impersonalism. Because I have performed the ritual, and I am in control, therefore I will get the result, and the result is mine, which I will enjoy. So we see it's still very much the idea that I am God, but it's just covered with the elements of the temporary aspects of the Varnashram system, of the bodily designations. While the impersonalist means he gives up those, means at least the lower levels, the karma aspect, and sticks to the jnana, though they're still attached to their sannyas and these things. So both are actually impersonal, because personal means we accept Krishna and our relationship with him. So then this Brahman came to Navadvipa because he had started taking up an interest in devotional service. And he was good in music. He knew the Raga Ragini system. He was very expert in singing. And he made a name for himself singing, you know, Vaishnava bhajans and that. So he was well known as a, you know, the common person would think he's a very advanced person because the externals were very, you know, very good. So then he went to Navadvip, you know, for inquiry, but at the same time to, you know, show himself because it was the place of the Vaishnavas. And he wanted to, you know, be hobnob with the other, you know, Vaishnavas and establish his position also as an elevated Vaishnava. So he came to the Paramahamsa Babaji's place, and he asked this question, is that, I understand that all Vaishnavas are, you know, are elevated and everything, but there's one question, is what about Vaishnavas who are not from Brahmin families? Should they actually be engaged in, you know, performing the samskars and all these rituals that are, you know, akin to the Brahmin caste? And should they be acharyas or gurus? Should they be initiating? So that was his doubt. Basically, he wants to say is the birth as a Brahmin is the most important. So then, the Paramahamsa, he didn't speak himself, but he got Vaishnava who previously was the Mayavadi, because they are totally into all these different kinds of things, to explain. You know, for his one, for his purification, and two, to show how he had been, now how he's become so elevated that he's gone beyond the attachment to the, you know, material conditioning. So then he explains about the Brahmin duties, and because in a Brahmin's duties, the most essential is chanting of the Gayatri Mantra. And this is the Brahma Gayatri. So this mantra is a prayer to the sun. And basically it means to Krishna's energy. So, but the smartas will see it simply as the sun. It means the devotees will see it that it's actually Krishna's energy. It means all the devotees are coming from Krishna, like this. And the devotees are expanding from the Sarup Shakti. So then, he is explaining that these duties that are there, then the weakness in them is that even though they're called nitya, nitya means daily, but it also means eternal. So it's called nitya meaning eternal, but actually it just means daily. Because you can't call it eternal, because this life they're a Brahmin, next life they may be a Kshatriya, next life they may be anything. So those duties were temporary. So factually the duty of the soul, that's the real duty, and that duty is to service to Krishna. But while one is in the conditioned nature, then those pious activities or those aspects of Varnashram that are favorable for our upliftment, our advancement, then those are kept. You know, because then Varnashram becomes useful. It's yukta vairagya. You take an element that is there. We have a material body. We have a conditioned nature, gross and subtle bodies, and they have a nature. So they will be peaceful when they are engaged according to their nature. So if we take that nature and we engage it according to Krishna's direction in the Varnashram system, but for pleasing Krishna, that purifies that nature. At the same time, then more important are the eternal activities of the soul, like hearing and chanting, associating with the Vaishnavas, worshipping the deity, taking advantage of association of the Dham, hearing Bhagavatam. This is the most essential. So the spiritual activities, they themselves are direct, and they purify us and attract us to Krishna. And the duties of Varnashram that are favorable, those are performed because they engage the conditioned nature, so then that becomes connected to Krishna, and we become purified from those mundane concepts. And then that frees us from those things that keep us from remembering Krishna, because these are the two problems. We need to remember Krishna and not forget him. But our problem is we're not remembering Krishna, and we're absorbed in forgetting. So forgetting comes from attachment to this material world, distraction by our conditioned nature. So and attachment to Krishna comes by serving him, engaging in our eternal or constitutional position. So therefore the devotional process means both of these things are going on at the same time. You have to simultaneously be engaged in those things that make you always remember Krishna, like hearing and chanting, associating with the devotees, or like here you're going on Parikram, hearing about the holy places, taking advantage of the association of the Dham. So these will attract us to Krishna. They establish us in the mood that I am servant of Krishna. So that is the positive attraction. But then the negative is that we engage the conditioned nature in Krishna's service through his direction. Then that purifies that. It means what is our material desire if we connect them to Krishna? Then there's no Krishna's there. No, it's not as direct. But he's there in that activity. It becomes spiritualized. And that gradually pulls us back from that. And then we're able to turn our face from looking away from Krishna to looking at Krishna. Like this. So the impersonalists also may use this system of engaging the conditioned nature for the purpose of understanding the soul and performing those duties. That will purify them. But because they have no attraction to Krishna, they're not performing the devotional activities to please Krishna. Therefore, without the attraction to Krishna, if they get to the Brahman platform, they'll stop there. But factually, we understand that no one can work with a detached, actual detached attitude without being a devotee. Because the non-devotees, then they are the non-devotees, then the impersonalists, they want to be God. So much ego and prestige is there. So they can't factually perform this system of Naishkarmya. Like that, maybe just go to show them. So then he's explained all those different things, and then he's come up to this point where just saying that when we say it's our duty, you know, so as a man it's our duty, as a woman it's our duty, as a husband or a wife or a parent or a child or a teacher or a student, those are only meaningful as long as while we're in that particular conditioned nature. But what lasts is our service to Krishna, that we're servant of Krishna. That's the actual identity. That's real understanding of the whole process of engaging nature. Varna means the soul has to engage their nature in the Lord's service. And so then, in this world, because we're conditioned, we identify with it. The body is I, the mind is I, intelligence, the ego is I. My materialistic desires, it means concept of enjoyment, is we identify with. So Varnashram takes that and engages it in Krishna's service, so that I has been touched to Krishna, and that mine has been touched to Krishna. But the factual thing is that we are servants of Krishna. That is actually the identity. And that, you know, that service to Krishna, that pleasing Krishna, that is actually what we're trying to gain. So that is what is ours. Krishna's satisfaction through serving him and serving his devotees. So then he's made that. So that is the eternal duty. And these other things aren't. So that brings us to this point here, But then he's explaining. So he's explained the nature of the mundane approach. Oh, another interesting thing he mentioned is that he says human beings are of two kinds, the intelligent and the unintelligent. So the intelligent means one who understands Krishna, one who's accepted their position as servant of Krishna. The unintelligent are those who think that they are, you know, of this world, the conditioned nature. So of those who are unintelligent, then the top is the Brahman. The Brahman is the highest. Next down is the Kshatriya, then the Vaishya, then the Shudra, then the outcast, like this. So the Brahman is the top of those who are not so intelligent, because they don't know Krishna. So he makes the point, so therefore, someone from a dog-eater family, if they have taken up the Vaishnava path, they are actually more elevated than the Brahman who doesn't know Krishna. Because that dog eater, he can save the world, while the Brahman can't even save himself. So then that answers his question on why the Vaishnavas, they are acting in the position of preachers and gurus and doing all these things. And the Brahman, if he's not a devotee, then what's the use? And if he is, then he's gone from the unintelligent to the intelligent. And in the intelligent class, that's all Vaishnavas. Then we see about who's mature, the Kanista, the Madhyam, the Uttam. What one does to, you know, engage and maintain one's conditioned nature, that is not important in the Vaishnava sphere. What's important is that surrender to Krishna, the dedication to Krishna, like that. So then it brings us to this, where then he makes the point. If one asks, what are the duties of the Vaishnavas, then I answer, the Vaishnava's duties are the eternal duties of the soul. When he is liberated from the world of matter, the Vaishnava soul attains his pure spiritual body, and with that body he engages in devotional activities that express his spiritual love for Krishna. When he resides in the material world, a person who is intelligent respectfully accepts all that advances his spiritual life and rejects all that hinders it. He does not blindly follow the orders and prohibitions of the scriptures. When the scriptures encourage devotion to Lord Hari, then such a person happily accepts those teachings. When the scriptures' teachings do not encourage devotion, he does not dishonor those teachings. In the same way, a Vaishnava also honors or rejects the prohibitions taught in the scriptures. A Vaishnava is the best person in the world. A Vaishnava is the friend of everyone in the world. A Vaishnava is the auspiciousness of the world. In this way, I have humbly said all I wish to say to the assembly of Vaishnavas. May the Vaishnavas wash away my faults and mistakes. So, from the soul, means the souls we see in the Brahma Samhita, then there's this verse, Yam Kama Krodha Sahaja Pranayari Bhiti Vatsalya Moha Guru Gaurava Sevi Bhavai. That in this verse is explained that by the nature of the affection, attraction and attachment to Krishna, then the devotee manifests the particular spiritual form that suits performing the activities of that attachment. So that is, so from the, the consciousness, the spiritual nature of the soul, the rasa of the soul, that's nature, how they want to serve Krishna, then they get a form that matches that. Because there they are servant. So because they're in the mood of servant, they want to serve in a particular way, and so then they get a particular spiritual form. While in the material world, we want to enjoy, not serve. So because we want to enjoy, then that is the, instead of service, that is the heart. That's the what's called the karana sharir. It's subtler than the subtle body. It means we have the gross body, the subtle body, and then there's what's called karana sharir. That means our consciousness on whether it's pure consciousness, you know, I am servant, or contaminated consciousness, and I am the controller and enjoyer. In other words, I'm trying to be God. So when we change from pure consciousness to polluted consciousness, then that will then manifest a body depending upon how we want to enjoy. The other is it manifests the body how we want to serve. That's the spiritual body. The material body is manifest how we want to enjoy. So then that creates the problem here. So the whole idea is those things that then stop us from going in that path down away from Krishna by being the controller and enjoyer, then those things are rejected. Even if the scripture recommends them, they're not for us. They're meant for someone who's in a lower position, who's interested in karma or jnana or, you know, something. So dharma, artha, or kama, like this. Then those are given up. But those things that are favorable, they help us establish ourselves as servant of Krishna and help us in respecting and dealing properly with the Vaishnavas and respecting the scriptures and engaging in worshipping the deity, respecting the Dham. Then those things are accepted. And then that helps us then comes to the platform of transcendence. But it says he doesn't blindly follow. Because if we just blindly follow, it's sentiment. And then the sentiment may not last, because sentiment can be dislodged very easily. Someone comes up with a different sentiment, then we can be changed. So therefore we should understand, we should know. And by knowledge, the intelligence can control the mind and keep the mind peaceful and focused. Because the mind, having manifest from the mode of goodness, it's only peaceful and happy when it's situated in goodness. And goodness comes when we follow the rules and regulations of the Varnashrama or the Pancharatric systems. So that makes the mundane mind peaceful. So then when we use the intelligence to see that we're following the process of yoga, then this is called buddhi yoga. And this buddhi yoga then establishes us properly on this path. So we perform the activity but with knowledge. So this is what Krishna is trying to explain to Arjuna in the Gita. Is by sentiment, he wants to fight and he wants to kill Duryodhana and his brothers. But by sentiment, he's thinking afterwards, and you know, we'll be the kings, we'll enjoy the kingdom with all of our, you know, friends and relatives and well-wishers. But then when he sees all his friends, relatives, and well-wishers that he wants to enjoy the kingdom with are also on the battlefield and are going to be killed, they're not just on his side. If they were all on his side, it would be very easy. He pulls his chariot in between the two armies, and he looks on his side of the army, and all he sees is all his relatives and friends and well-wishers. And then he looks on Duryodhana's side of the family, and all he sees is demon nonsense people that he's not interested in. Then it would be very enthusiastic. He would be ready to fight. Because then he's confident that we'll win. They'll lose, so therefore we'll have all of our friends. But no, he sees all his friends on both sides. That means everybody he wants to enjoy with will be finished. So then, because it's sentiment that he's going into this, it's by sentiment that then he is giving up the desire for fight. So Krishna says he's a fool. He's quoting nicely religion, nicely Varnashram. He's saying it very, and some very important points. You know, that if you destroy the kings who are protecting the kingdom, the women, they will be unprotected, and then you'll get all kinds of mixed children that'll be there, and when you mix all these children, mixed mentalities, then they create so much problem. Like that, the kids don't know who they are, they create so much problem for the society. And then the whole, everything that's good in the society, all the nice welfare work and other important things, the offerings to the forefathers, everything will stop. And then the whole place will go to hell. Like that. So then he said all this, and then Krishna said he was a fool. And so Arjuna, okay, what is foolish? You please explain. So then he starts talking about the soul, and establishing the soul can't be, you know, burnt by fire or withered by the wind or moistened by water, and the soul is eternal and you're not actually killing, they're going to die anyway, you know, it means the body is killing the other body, the soul, you know, all these things he's explaining. And then Arjuna thinks, great, I'll go to the forest and become, you know, a jnani. You know, so then Krishna says, no, your nature is that of a kshatriya, you go to the forest, you fight. They were in the forest for 14 years, all they did is fight. If you read Mahabharata, that's all they did there. Like that, you know, killing this demon, that demon, fighting for this, going to the Swayambar, you know, catching by all kinds of tricks Subhadra. That's all they did. They didn't do anything else. They're Kshatriyas. So then he says, that's all you're going to do, like that. So then Arjuna is bewildered. He said, you just told me I was a fool for quoting Varnasha. Then you talk about the soul, and I think, great. And then what is the conclusion? You say, back to Varnasha. I'm doing, you know. So then he can't understand. So then Krishna explains, says, no, there's a difference. You're following Varnasha out of sentiment. And then you want to giving up this sentiment and simply going to intellectualism. But the point is both have to be combined. You have to have religion and you have to have knowledge. You have to have both. That is Buddhi Yoga. Because the intelligence won't purify. Because without engagement, you don't get any result. So you have to engage. But if you engage without knowledge, then the result you'll get will be inferior. So you engage in activities with knowledge. That will get you the right result. Then you'll be purified of this material contamination. So that's the speciality of Buddhi Yoga. It's something that we're not used to. It's either we do an activity because it will give us a fruit and we want that, or if we don't like the fruit, we'll give up the activity, no problem. But to perform the activity without wanting the fruit's not ours. That's something not of this world. If people do work for others, then other people will say their sentiment is foolish. You know, what are they getting from it? Right, some sentiment, you know, but the real thing that happens in this world is money, power, influence, you know, fame, these things. So we're not used to this. We've never done this before. That's the unique thing of the Daiva Varnashram system, as Krishna is explaining it here, is that it is you are performing the religious duties, but not for our own enjoyment. The fruit is already given to Krishna when it comes. And the fruit, whatever Krishna wants. We simply see our nature, engage in Krishna's service, and then we will be freed from this material contamination. It's because we, yeah. So this is the whole point, that this is major point that Krishna is making in the Gita. So this is how you'll free yourself from the material nature. And then the other half is then devotional service, by surrendering to Him, serving Him, becoming His devotee, manmanabhava madbhakto madhyajimam namaskuru. Then we will attain to the perfectional platform. You know? So that is like that. Yeah. So therefore the Vaishnava is the best, he's saying here. The Vaishnava, he's the best person, he's a well-wisher of everyone. You know, there's, and what he's actual auspiciousness. Because otherwise we think, what's auspicious? Material piety, that's auspiciousness. That gets us satisfaction, gets us good result. Auspiciousness means what gets a good, prosperous result. But here he says the Vaishnava is actually what's auspicious. Everything else in this world is actually inauspicious. Okay. Means if there's any questions at any time, you know, you can, yes, please.
You said engage your activity with knowledge is Buddha Yoga. So if one person chants the holy name with no knowledge, but just sees a friend or a relative doing that, and that they see the result of peacefulness, versus one person chanting the holy name seeing it as like union of Radha and Krishna, what's the result of that? I mean, one has knowledge and one doesn't, but ultimately, well.
Means when we'll start. That's the meaning of the Kanista, basically, is the emphasis is on religion and not on so much on understanding, like that. Because there's more the feeling of what one gets out of it rather than what Krishna gets out of it. See, the Kanista thinks what I'm going to get out of it. The Madhyam thinks, what's Krishna going to get out of it? Like that. And so, and then the Uttam is the perfection of that. There's no traces of the attachment to the conditioned nature. Like, see, the Kanista engages his nature in Krishna's service for what he will get from it. The Madhyama engages his conditioned nature for what Krishna will get out of it. But there's still some touch of attachment to engaging the conditioned nature. But he's not interested in the fruit. Well, the uttama means he's beyond the conditioned nature. And so then he is not interested in results. So if he acts as an uttam, then you know, fine for him. Or if he acts as a madhyam, still he'll be on that platform. There's no attachment to anything in this world. So in the beginning, then it's expected, it's understood that someone will do it. So whatever way they will take up the chanting and the process is good, is glorious. But as they advance, they will see that they need to refine and develop. You know, like a small child, the first step they make, everybody's clapping and, you know, thinking this is, you know, very great, you know, thing has happened. You know, even though the next second the kid falls over on his face. You know, and they never fall on their face so much. Oh, they do fall on their face. So they generally fall over backwards, but they fall on their face a lot also. So, but no one's worried about that. But if the same way of walking that when you were, you know, 1 year old and you're 20, then people say there's some problem, right? So it's understood in the beginning, whatever is there is nice. Anything is nice. But as you advance, naturally you'll become more mature and more inquire, why am I doing this? What is the actual purpose? What is the benefits? How does it connect, you know, to what's going on? You know, what's the philosophy? How does this philosophy actually enter into my life? Right? Because philosophy shouldn't be dry. That's the trademark of the mental speculators, is that their philosophy is dry. It's not practical. But for the Vaishnav, it's dynamic. So that means it's come to the platform of culture. So Vaishnav culture is not different from the philosophy. And the philosophy is not different from the culture. The one is the intellectual understanding of it, and the other is the practical application of it. So just with time, the more one understands, the more one is capable. It means according to one's nature. It means everybody doesn't have to become, you know, a great Sanskritist or Vedantist. According to nature, if you have that nature, then you engage that nature by engaging it this way. But if one doesn't, but still one should know something, how to connect it to Krishna, why one's doing it. And that will keep one from being distracted, his sentiment being distracted by something else, you know. Or sometimes we see someone's very nicely going and this, and his friend, like you're saying, the friend is doing and that, and they get all involved and this, and it's very nice. And then if one of the friends in the circle of friends then bloops, then the whole world, oh, what's this, what's going on? Because it's sentiment. But if they have knowledge, then they understand this, no, this is proper. Whether someone else does it or not, that's another thing. If I want to actually benefit myself and others, then I will continue. So that way the intelligence then overcomes the hazards of the sentiment. Though it's not a problem to start purely on the platform of sentiment. Yeah.
So you just told me that chanting Krishna's name is for his pleasure. So does that mean I should stop asking for Krishna to... Yeah.
To
purify me.
But why do you want to get purified?
So I can serve Krishna better.
So then that won't be pleasing to Krishna?
I guess it does. But yeah. I mean, on the ultimate platform, it's to please Krishna.
Yeah.
And then, but...
But if you're at that stage, then that's what you can relate to. So therefore you do it. But ultimately we see is that just becoming purified will get you to the Brahman platform. But then what are you going to do with the Brahman platform? Right? So therefore you have to develop your love for Krishna. So getting purified is only part of it. The real thing is to develop love for Krishna. So then a higher platform is to pray that we will develop our love for Krishna. At the same time, if we see that there's so many impediments to that love, then we can pray to Krishna that those things will be removed. But our goal is not to become purified, right? Our goal is to develop love. So it's just a matter of how we approach. You understand?
Yeah.
It means this. Okay. Anything else on this? Or? Yes.
On a different point, you're talking about or an unintelligent Brahmin is less than a dog eater who becomes a devotee. And when I was reading this section, I was thinking, it wasn't clear to me if there's some like level of devotional qualification that's required of like the dog eater to be able to say that. Like, if the person is really just a very casual devotee, like they come to the Sunday feast or something, is that still person more than a Brahmin?
How you say? Means the simple answer is yes. Because it's just like you can have an ocean of illusion and one drop of substance, and that substance is more than a whole ocean of illusion. So in that way, yes. But it's understood here, we can see by his answer, that he's meaning someone who's actually taken seriously the process. So they wouldn't be a casual devotee, but they would actually be what would be called a sampradayic devotee. Is they have taken shelter of the devotees of the parampara and are following their instructions and are serving under their direction. So that person then is better. So we have to understand is that there's an interesting thing that comes up, is that when you take up devotional the material world is meant to purify the living entity. You know, whatever his condition is, it's meant to correct him from the materialistic consciousness and bring him to spiritual consciousness. That's the purpose of the material world. So that means, and Krishna says he has one path. So things that take him towards him then are elevating, and those that take us towards hell are degrading. But it's just one path. So then, on this path, you can do these activities for Krishna or not for Krishna. But in any case, even if they're not for Krishna, if you're doing elevating activities, then that's considered better in the material world. And those that are taking one away from Krishna are considered worse in the material world. So, and on the transcendental platform, the material world is considered worse and the spiritual world is considered better. So now, within the, So when one takes up devotional service, he has his karma from previous life, you know, in so many lives that he's going to experience. When one takes up devotional service, those are gone. When he takes chants the holy name, those are removed. They're not there anymore. But the living entity still has the conditioned consciousness that created those, the karma. And so you have to correct the conditioned consciousness. So the conditioned consciousness of a devotee that needs to be corrected, the method of correction is the same as a non-devotee who has to give up the same thing. Like if someone's a devotee, let's say he's attached to stealing. So the reactions to his previous stealing are gone. But he still has the nature to the consciousness to steal. It's the same thing to purify someone who's a non-devotee. So therefore, Krishna will give you a result or a situation that looks like what would be karma. But it's not karma. It's Krishna's arrangement. And then in that arrangement, then we will become purified. And we can progress, or we may get disturbed with the process of devotional service and, you know, not progress. But in any case, the correction is the same. Does that make some sense?
That I'm point? Not quite following that.
Means, how you say, it's just like you have the king's son or you have his friend. If they do something wrong, the correction for both is the same. You understand? Means to correct an improper mentality, it's the same.
Right.
Yeah. You know? Like, okay. So, therefore, for the devotee, it's the same as for the karmi. But the devotee, meaning the karmi, it is being arranged by the modes of nature. And they're just mechanically, modes just run them through what would be the reactions to their pious and sinful activities. like this. For the devotee, it's not mechanical. It's being orchestrated by Krishna. But it'll look the same. Because you correct it by the same way. Or give another example. If a karmi nonsense gets a cold and a devotee gets a cold, the medicine's the same. It's not a different medicine. Right? But for the karmi, it's being arranged by the modes of nature. For the devotee, it's being arranged by Krishna. Though through the modes of nature, but still Krishna's arranging. So therefore, then we see as anyone who's taken up devotional service is special. Then within special, there's more special, you know, and most special. But it's not that until they come to a very advanced platform, then they're just a schmo. You know? It's that they've taken up devotional service, then they're special. This also then points to the specialness of Srila Prabhupada and the acharyas, is that they could create so many special people that we may even take them for granted. When previously you wouldn't see so many special people. When the Lord performs his pastime, then there's thousands and thousands. But then after, then we see then there's it's rare. And then we see Prabhupada is again manifest such a thing. So we may take devotees kind of for granted because there's so many of them. But actually it's a very rare thing and they're very special. So anyone who's started anything, then they're more special than the elevated Brahman. Though they may not be so, their expertise in devotional practices and the philosophy may not be there, but still they're very special. You know. Does that make some sense?
Yeah, that's clear.
Okay.
So to further clarify his question, the casual devotee may be down here as far as purification is concerned, conditioning, and the elevated Brahman may be up here in the Sattva-gun, whatever.
Mm.
But because he's not a Vaishnav, he will, you know, move slowly through the material realm, I don't know, to heavenly planets, whatever, and stay there. Whereas that casual devotee will relatively quickly move up to the spiritual sky.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in that way he's higher, although materially speaking he's lower as far as qualifications and qualities and so on are concerned.
Also one more thing, the Brahmana's qualities are there, but the Vaishnava's qualities are real. Means they are because they're connecting to Krishna, so they are real qualities.
Yeah.
Not just the qualities.
Yeah, it means he's a Brahman, he may have all nice qualities. But they're actually temporary because he's only a Brahman in this life because of his conditioning. But in his next life, who knows what it'll be. But the Vaishnav, even if he doesn't have much qualifications, he's not so humble or knowledgeable or tolerant or peaceful or, you know, all these things. But what he does have is real. So that vision has to be seen. But at the same time, is one doesn't leave it there. That's why he makes the point is one can't just sentimentally accept. Otherwise, then that's good enough. You know, that's a very common thing. Well, it's good enough. You know, I chant, that's all. You know, it's, you know, we chant, we don't care for all these things. But the difficulty comes is we're caring for so many other things, so we should know how to engage all those things we care about in Krishna's service. So therefore we must advance. But at the same time, as for others, then we see the good quality that they are devotees. So therefore, whatever qualities they do have that's good are real. While the karmis, even though they seem to be have so many qualifications, they're unreal, they're illusion. Because they'll be gone soon. The person leaves his body and those qualities are gone. Who knows what will be the next life. While the devotee, those qualities, if he dies now, will remain. Next life they'll continue. So it's real. But if we're in a position to help such people, then we will try to train them so that their qualities naturally are complementary to their spiritual platform that they are, that they have situated themselves. Does that make sense? So we always have to, there's always two ways to see things. We have to make sure that we're seeing from our point of view. You know, we respect others, you know, are tolerant of others, honor others, and we're critical of ourselves. Like that. But if we're honoring ourselves and, you know, broad-minded with ourselves and, you know, and very, you know, tolerant and all that, and with others who are very strict, and that's not so good. It should be the other way around. You know? But that in that criticalness of ourself is not from the mode of ignorance. We think, oh, I'm so useless, I'm so fallen, I'm so this, I'm so that. But the main essential point in this mentality and the taste in it is that it's me. I am the most terrible and disgusting and all this. It's me who's, you know, and everybody should appreciate, and, you know, I'm the victim, so everybody should be kind and nice. You know, and if somebody else, if we come up and say, yes, you know, I'm so fallen and this and that, we expect others to go, no, you're so wonderful. But what if they go say, yeah, it's about time you figured that out. You know, we'd be very, what? You know, what is this? You know, he doesn't know how to behave, this, that, so many things. Then we can understand it's just self-centeredness. So it's understood as we feel like this, but that's what's the foolishness. We're not the bad qualities. We're the soul. Soul is pure. Our foolishness is we've identified with these bad qualities and think they're us. Therefore, you'll see in the prayers of the Acharyas, they will say that we're fallen. That's very common, but you don't see that they get entangled in the mode of ignorance there. They're not thinking of going out and hanging themselves or something. They just think that I'm such a fool, I've given up your service, so please accept me as your servant. That's the solution. The solution is not to dwell on how terrible we are. That is just so that we realize that I shouldn't continue in that direction. Then that I should now take up service to Krishna and then move progressively. Otherwise, then it's just ignorance and we get caught up. It's another trick of Maya. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? Yes.
You were speaking before about... It's not really related, actually.
Sure.
But you were speaking before about those who are properly following the Varnashram system and fulfilling some desires according to their conditioned nature. And I was curious if there are recommendations for those that are fulfilling some desires according to their conditioned nature, but at the same time rendering some direct devotional service or performing some direct devotional practice. Is there a recommendation? It's kind of a two-part inquiry here. A recommendation so that one doesn't become sort of overpowered perhaps by perhaps more attraction towards those desires or the fruit or what comes from the conditioned nature or the desire, the attraction towards the conditioned nature. That's the first question. And actually, I forget what the second one was.
Start there.
Okay.
The Manusamhita, which is basically the authority on Varnashram. Then the invocation opens that the sages have come to Lord Brahma, and they came to ask him about the rules of religion, rules of dharma. And they say the reason that they've come to him because he knows the purpose of Varnashram to attain to the lotus feet of the Lord. It means other sages can tell them the rules and regulations, fine, but they can't tell how to connect it to Krishna. So that's what's special about Manu, is that it's for that purpose. It's Varnashram for the purpose of attaining to Krishna. So then one sees once what is the conditioned nature, what are the needs, and then if you perform an activity, then it will give a result. So if a material activity is performed, it will give a material result. That's called karma. If you perform an activity, but it's not being done for the result, it's being done for Krishna, it doesn't give a material result. Right? It purifies you. Because when you perform an activity, then along with the result of that coming, means you perform an activity, that will then start the growth of a plant. And that will then create a situation in which you will get the result you want. But it does another thing also. It creates the seed for doing that activity again. That's why piety and prayaschitta and all these things can't remove the material contamination. It's because even though you're doing nice things, getting nice results, still the seed is there to perform more of the same. So when you perform an activity of varnashram, simply for varnashram, for pious purposes, then it will create more seeds and it will take one deeper inside. But if you perform the activity to please Krishna, then the seed that's planted is to do more service for Krishna. Right? And so then the result that comes will be Krishna's, whatever result Krishna wants to give. Because it's not working in the realm of karma. So then one is taken out. That's how technically one gets out from the process, because it's engaged in Krishna's service. That's why then one needs to engage it how the authorities say it should be done. Otherwise, if we just do it according to our own mind, then what's the authority? And then naturally, then accordingly, we will get a similar non-authorized result. Does that make some sense?
It kind of leads me to the second point. The second question I have. How does one see the connection between the activity that they're performing? It seemingly may appear to not be connected to the direct service of Krishna. How is it that one can see that? So they can see that somehow there is some offering to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
How is it?
Yeah, it means the very important. Is that basically your third? It means your third, fifth chapter of the Gita, and then those ones after the 12th. They're telling all the technical points of that. Basic thing is this: we're a soul, so we're not the conditioned nature, but the conditioned nature has its nature. It's like you have a computer; it has its nature. You have to deal with it as a computer. You can't use it as a hammer. You can't grate your potatoes on the keyboard. It would be against the nature. You understand? We have to keep it nicely in the situation that it works in and deal with it for, doing whatever we do with them. That means we understand nature. So the key is that we understand that we're soul, and what is the dharma of the soul? That's to serve Krishna. Then we have a conditioned nature. What's the dharma of that conditioned nature? We're not that, but it has to be engaged according to its nature. So therefore, if the nature of it at present, let's say, is a grihastha, then it must do the grihastha duties. But we're doing those duties because that's what Krishna gave those rules. And we're engaging according to Krishna's direction. And because we're attached to it, therefore we're performing the duties, but to get out of that attachment. Right? We think that there's something to gain in the grihastha ashram. Right? There's some special magic there in the association between men and women. So therefore, woman is thinking man is like this, and man is thinking woman's like that. Right? So the varnashram system says how to act as a man, so the woman will be satisfied, and the man person that will be satisfied. And the woman, how she should act, so that the man will be satisfied, and actually she'll be satisfied. Because Krishna knows what's in nature, he created it. It's not up to us how it is. I can say no, it's a boogie board, but it's take it out and see what happens. It's not sorry, but it's a computer. Say what we like, but it's a computer. So say what we like about the man's nature, woman's nature. We can come up with all kinds of new agey and politically correct, but it doesn't matter a bit because we didn't make it. Krishna made it. So he says, man behaves like this, woman behaves like this. Then you'll get what you want out of it. Then, when the soul has gotten what he wants, then he will realize that those things aren't making me happy. It's the devotional activities, those make me happy. And the only thing of benefit out of having done all those varnashram things was that I was doing it to please Krishna. So that's useful. But the other stuff is useless. So then that is what the vanaprastha is that one has understood that. And then one shifts gears from you know, dharma, art, and kama into transcendental service. He spends the bulk time with there. So it is indirect, but it's because we're attached to it. You have to make the best out of a bad bargain. We have it. We have to deal with it. We're in the body. We have to live with it. So until we can give up the, you know, dealing with the needs of the body, like the Paramahamsa, we have to address it. But we should address it how Krishna says, and for the purpose of pleasing Krishna. Therefore, how do we please Krishna? So Krishna says, you know, Grihastha does like this, you know, Brahman does like this, Kshatriya does like this. You know, then we follow that, you know, but like it says here, according to what is useful for devotional service. Those things that are meant, means the Varnashram system is actually meant for the devotees to help them go back to Godhead. But those who are not interested in devotional service, better they're following Varnashram than being demons. Like that. And even if they're demons, better they're following it. Because it makes a better atmosphere for the devotees to perform their activities in. They can perform theirs nicer. So therefore, then so many rules are given to engage those on lower consciousness. So the Vaishnav then distinguishes those, cuts those out, and keeps just what's the essence of the whole system. And then he finds it's very valuable. Does that make some sense? But that's what we meant before. It's not direct. Direct is hearing, chanting, associating. That's what creates our attraction to Krishna. But because we're absorbed in the material energy, think I'm the body, therefore we pull ourselves out of that by engaging those desires in Krishna's service. So even though it's not direct, it's services that we're doing it to purify ourselves to get out of that material consciousness so that we can actually fully take advantage of the pure, you know, chanting and pure association. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Can you, Maharaj, can you give some recommendation or information about how to determine your devotional service that you've taken to chanting the names of Krishna, and this is assuming you don't have a guru at this point, a Diksha guru or maybe not even a Shiksha guru, but to actually how to become engaged in his devotional service, because I find personally that there's a desire to do service, but then the ego is also there and is saying, well, you want to do this service but not that service, or I want to find the service that's right for me. So I find it confusing to understand where we should start in terms of identifying what service we should be doing for Krishna.
Means we distinguish between the nature of the soul and nature of the conditioned, you know, the body and the subtle body. So the first thing is get the soul properly situated. So then anything that is to engage in the Lord's service, especially hearing and chanting, studying Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, these things, you know, attending, you know, the temple and these kind of anything spiritual, that we should see is established. And at the same time, it's whatever we're doing, because if we're new to devotional service, we're already doing something to maintain ourselves, and we have some situation that we're in. So we continue that. But we try to get these things established. Then with time, it will become more obvious for us what to do and how to engage then our conditioned nature. You know, are we rightly situated, you know, in a proper situation of ashram or in varna and these things. And then of devotional activities, then they're all good. Though there may be some we may prefer because it's more close. The only reason we prefer one over the other because it's closer to our conditioned nature. But actually the spiritual nature, it doesn't matter. They're all good. Any of them are nice. You don't have to worry. You know, that we should engage the body, the mind, the words, you know. So therefore, you know, even washing pots engages the body. And since we're very, you know, used to thinking we're the body, it engages that concept in Krishna's service. And then slowly that becomes purified. Then we're able to concentrate on other things. You know, the mind, the intelligence, we can start to see. So therefore we see the processes. In the path, this Buddhi Yoga, then the first stage is Karma Yoga. We engage ourselves in the activities, you know, the senses are engaged in activities that are connected to Krishna. And by that, we're purified. So naturally, then knowledge and detachment come. So we start becoming detached from this world. And we start to get knowledge about what's going on. So that brings us to the second stage of the Buddha Yoga, which is Jnana Yoga. So then and there, we're able to see things intellectually, discern, you know, between the soul and the body, and, you know, psychologically, just how the material world's working, like that. And then the next stage then we get to is actually when the dawning of this devotion starts coming, arising, then that becomes the driving force, like that. And when that comes, then that basically, like, takes us very nicely to Krishna. Is that okay? Yes.
When I think of like conditioned nature and the purification of it, I think a little bit of, you know, kind of wiping out our characteristics and personalities and, you know, what makes us who we are. So can you elaborate a little bit on how, you know, we go through the process and still, you know, some of our characteristics may not be or how should I say, maybe just, you know, interests we have or things that, you know, are part of who we are. You know, how do you deal with that? Right?
Yeah. See, there's no quality, means there's nothing in this material world that's fully bad or fully good. So when we talk about purification, it doesn't mean anything goes away, it becomes purified. Just like, let's say, you have a young child. And young children, you know, may be very innocent, and because of that innocence, or that what we would call purity, at least in the material world, then they're very straightforward. Right? They'll come up to you and ask you things or say things that let's say an adult wouldn't be able to say. And no one minds because of the purity. But if you have an adult who's, you know, in your face and all that, then it's annoying. So the quality is the same. But one is pure and one is impure. So the quality doesn't have to change. It's just the quality of the quality. Is it the good aspect of that or the bad? Let's say someone's very powerful. So if they're very powerful and very benevolent, everybody appreciates that. Everybody, you know, is looking, appreciates a great king who's very powerful, so therefore he can maintain discipline and see that people are protected. At the same time, he's very kind. But if they're like a dictator, then no one likes that. Same power. It's the same thing. It's just a matter of whether it's pure or impure. So the process of the devotional activities is to purify the character. The conditioned nature will not go away. As long as one's in the body, it's there. Because that's the nature. It's not us. The body is not us. The mind's not us. The intelligence is not us. We're something else, the soul. We have our own natural character. But being in the body, we identify with it, and so we think this is us. But we just have to see that the quality of those characteristics of the gross and subtle body are in their purified state. So that's what the process of devotional service does to the gross and subtle body. It purifies them. It brings that same quality, instead of it being in ignorance, it brings it to a platform of goodness. And then from there, it's very easy for the soul to then go to the platform of pure goodness, in which they can then be engaged, you know, directly in Krishna's service, you know, without the impediments of the gross and subtle body. So the character won't go away, you'll see it becomes nicer. So being personal is how you can tell that it works. Is that when you see when devotees join, they're fairly similar, the mentality. But as with time, you see the devotees are so individual, like that, you know. Until ultimately, then they come to their transcendental spiritual platform, which is very unique. Every soul is uniquely different than the other. That way they increase Krishna's pleasure by that unique interaction. So there's no problem in losing qualities. It's just like, you know what I'm saying? But it just means the impure part of it goes away. Does that make sense? Yeah. Should we continue? Because now it's 6:15. Or should we?
I think questions or anybody.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Is it?
It's like a two-part question, depending on the answer to this first question.
Means if you like it, then it's one. If you don't like it, then there's a second.
Can you just shortly elaborate on the? Well, it's probably an easy answer, but the purpose of the material world, you said, was to bring one to spiritual consciousness. And then when one comes to spiritual consciousness, instead of the modes of nature, instead of the entity being driven by the modes of nature, he's driven by Krishna's will, is that?
Yeah. Means see, the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. So in the spiritual world you have Sat, Chit, Ananda. So that reflects into the material world as goodness, passion, ignorance. So for those on the transcendental platform, then they are how you say it? They are under the control of yoga maya, and they engage in Krishna's service. But those in the material world, then the reflection of that comes as mahamaya. So it's the same person, same energy. Probably gives the example of the same energy, electricity, can heat and it can cool. You know, you can use it in a refrigerator, you can use it as a heater. But if you want to enjoy Krishna's energy, then one comes under the control of the modes of nature. If you want to serve Krishna and not enjoy his energy, then you come under the shelter of the internal potency. Because it's the same thing. That's why things here and the things there externally look the same, though they're very different internally. You know, in the spiritual world, the devotees there, they have, you know, a head and two arms and a body and two legs. You know, the feet point forward, the nose is on the front side, you know, and the hair is on the back side. It's the same, right? You know, men wear dhotis, women wear saris. You know, they walk on the ground and trees, you know, have the roots down and leaves up. It's all the same. But the difference is there is controlled by the spiritual potency because it's for pleasing Krishna. And here, because people want to enjoy it, they want to be Krishna. Therefore, then it's a reflection. It looks like the original, but there's no substance. Yeah? Like the tree reflected in the water, it looks exactly the same as the original tree. And you can point out, you know, there's that fruit is reflected here, and the bark is reflected here, and the leaves over there are reflected over there. So you can say, you can see that the nature of things are reflected here. But the difference is there it's being done to please Krishna, here it's being done to please ourselves. Does that make some sense?
Yeah.
Is there any other parts to that, or?
I think that's it.
Okay. 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 Yeah.
A long time ago, I heard another devotee make the point you just made, but I never understood it. How three modes of nature are a perverted reflection of Sat, Chit, Ananda. Could you elaborate on that and explain that?
Yeah. See, Sat means your platform of existence. Then Chit means the platform of activities. You know, your knowledge, your process. And Ananda means the happiness that's gained from the relationship. Right? Ananda only comes when there's some contact and the interaction is of a pleasing nature, you get a result you want. So that's one. It means these can be explained in many different ways. So just taking that, so in the material world, then ignorance is our platform of existence. Because we think, I am God, I am this body, you know, this house is mine, this is my family, this is my country. So because of that, then that's the basis of the existence. Right? Then you have your activities, that are passion, that you perform to get a result based on some relationships. You know, me and my house, so then I perform an activity and, you know, I painted it and now I'm very happy with it. Or, you know, me and my wife and some activity and then you get the result that you're happy with. So, therefore, we see is that the body, the gross body, and everything around us, that has come from, manifest from ignorance. The senses and intelligence that we do use to do the activities come from the mode of passion. And the mind, which then is satisfied on attaining its goal, is from the mode of goodness. So goodness is from Hladini, passion from Chit, and Sandini is ignorance is from Sandini. Does that make some sense?
Yeah, thank you. That was very interesting.
Anything else? Or?
Okay.
I just wanted to ask about how we're in the Pali Dharma and as well for that we have, just about I've been to the Dharma a few times and I always find that I'm always praying for something, and this time I was thinking to myself, well, I'd like to not always pray for me, you know, I want this, I want that. Even though it's spiritual desires, but I always feel I'm taking, and always taking from the Dharma. And I would like to kind of give to the Dharma, give to, you know, the Dharma, my thought. And I don't know how that should manifest, in, you know, so I was wondering if you could kind of just, maybe it's a very subtle thing, so maybe it's just a mental thing, but anyway, I'd like to kind of turn to that movement. Given instead of thinking, I've only got so much time to see what I can take, to see what mercy I can take back with me. But, I mean, it's not a bad thing, but I just suppose I want to kind of give something more than take.
There's the aspect of that getting the mercy means that we are respecting the Dham, that it has mercy to give. So then that's nice. Just like the child we see, you know, always goes to the mother to get things. But the child doesn't, the mother doesn't mind. Because the focus is there on the mother, like that. But then in maturity, then we see that the child then is assisting the mother. So then the, you say, the element of there's, we want this, we want that, and because it's connected to Krishna, it's good. But then there also can come a stage where we can think how what would please them, how to be an instrument for what you know Krishna wants done, like that, rather than, you know, I want to be, you know, a good manager and I want to do this and I want to do that. But then those are connected with our conditioned nature, which is good, we're engaging it. But then the element of the soul is that how we can be an instrument. And so in that instrument, Krishna may want to engage us in this way, Krishna may want to engage us in that way. And then we take, you know, direction from our own studies, our own understandings, what the acharyas are saying, what the senior devotees are saying, you know, what our, you know, our close associates, trusted associates, you know, give direction. So it's a natural kind of, both are there. It means, well, as long as one has, you know, these strong needs, then one will find then the prayers may be along those lines. And it's not wrong, because then they're engaged in Krishna's service, they'll be purified. And then with time, then one will see naturally that they may change. Does that make any sense? Anything else? Or? No? Okay. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Gaura Taigora Prema Ranjana.